Welcome to my podcast called You Must Be Out of Your Mind. My name is Dr. Don Wood. Everyone has experienced some trauma at times during their life. These traumatic events and experiences create a significant impact on how your mind works on a day-to-day basis. At the same time, creates long-term effects on your emotional and physical health. It will interfere with your ability to stay present and in the moment. After years of research, I used my knowledge of neuroscience to create what I call a memory reset. This memory reset reduces and eliminates the impact of the trauma and allows you to experience peace and clarity. My podcast will share many stories of people experiencing similar symptoms to you and how their lives have been positively impacted by our TIP program. I can't wait to share with you how the impossible is possible and why you must be out of your mind. And there it is. So welcome to another podcast on You Must Be Out of Your Mind. And as you know, I always bring on great guests who have great insights and great experience in what they do. That sort of ties in a little bit with what we do as well. And today we have Jennifer Longmore, who absolutely ties into what we do. I'm excited to talk to Jennifer. Jennifer, welcome to You Must Be Out of Your Mind.
Thank you. I feel like that's a personal attack. I'm just kidding.
Well, it could be, it depends on how people look at it, right? But the idea is we want to get you out of the way your mind has been operating, right? And we're talking a little bit beforehand, about trauma and how trauma affects our minds. But I'd love for you to just sort of share with the audience, what you do, right? And what you can share with us that makes some sense as to what we do.
Awesome. I'd love to. And thank you for having me on. I'm so grateful to be able to spend this time with you. I love talking about this stuff. So way back in the day, I used to work as a forensic investigator, and I was going out and investigating pretty horrific crimes against children and dealing with really, I'm not going to get into it because I don't want to create vicarious trauma. But needless to say, I dealt with a fair share of narcissists, borderline personality disorder, sociopaths, psychopaths. And so I learned a lot about what mental health actually looks like compared to how the rest of us that don't suffer with those things tend to move through the world, because we all feel like we're crazy at times, right? Especially in a world that, programs us to be thinking that we're lacking and that we're not enough. And, your value is dependent upon what you do versus who you be, all those kind of things. But anyways, the gift of that background is that, well, first of all, you end up getting the equivalent of a PhD in psychology, right? Because you just get exposed to so much. When I started my business and I was doing a lot of coaching and so on, I had the privilege of being able to work with people that had backgrounds that I would have investigated. I didn't investigate their families, but I might as well have, right? And so I knew the ripple effect of what would happen to people when they'd been exposed to those kind of backgrounds. I'm talking about like ritualistic sexual abuse or like really, really horrific physical abuse, things like that. And so I was able to treat them differently than other people potentially, because I had the insight. Like I was not at all surprised with what they were presenting, and I knew exactly what was going on. I knew exactly what they needed to hear so that they could make, I don't want to say peace with their past, but have a sense of at least neutrality around what had happened and that it was not at all their fault and all of the things that can tend to happen when we have various traumas like that. But I've had my own traumas too. I had a car accident when I was 21, and that was a very inconvenient time in my life. I had overbooked myself in university because I'm a very efficiency-minded person. So I thought, well, I'm going to double down on my courses, even though the university absolutely does not recommend it, so that I get to graduate quicker. And then I went ahead with my cute little self and manifested a car accident that literally was a metaphor for my life at the time, which was that my car spun out of control. And that was my life at the time. And I was irritated, because it was not part of the plan. It was inconvenient to me because I had things to do. Like I had all these workaholic kind of things going on in my brain. But point is, we've all had trauma, and we recognize that trauma, when we're doing all the right things, at least with my clients, I can say this, and I'm sure the same is true for you. Like when I'm trying all the other different angles to help someone collapse a mindset that just doesn't serve them or isn't true, and things don't seem to be working, that's my cue to go, okay, there's probably some trauma here that's keeping this person locked into a pattern that we need to liberate them from.
Yeah. Yeah. And so much when you're just talking about sexual abuse, right? I really say that that's the true pandemic in this world. Mm-hmm. I see people who have been dealing with sexual abuse from their childhood, and mm-hmm. it's not talked about enough, and people aren't sure. You know, I didn't know that a lot of my friends were dealing with sexual abuse, physical abuse, because mm-hmm. I came to none of that. Mm-hmm. I had an amazing, idyllic childhood where I didn't deal with trauma. And mm-hmm. so I thought everybody lived my life. And then afterwards, I started realizing, well, now it's explaining why they did some of the things they did. Why did they get into drugs or alcohol or, mm-hmm. or certain, you know, behaviors? Started making sense. And it sounds like you studied a lot of that by, you know, working with those kinds of people. And most of mm-hmm. them had those kinds of paths. Wouldn't that sound accurate?
Absolutely. I mean, all I had to do, it was usually the mothers, right? Because they were not protecting their kids and they were repeating the past. Now, some mothers said to me, well, I had to go through it. So why shouldn't my kid too? Which is a whole other, you know, ball of wax. But they just, the trauma in them would have their blinders on and could only see inviting new people into their world in their adulthood that were going to abuse their children. And I would interview these moms and the dads too, but I would interview the moms, and I don't want to say it was boring, because that's not the word I'm looking for, but it was so predictable. I could almost finish their sentences before they even started speaking, because I knew what was going to come out of their mouth. And I agree with you, because one out of every four girls report sexual abuse. That's just what's reported. And one out of every five boys report sexual abuse. Now, those were the stats back in the day. I don't know what they are now, but that's just what's reported. Even if we look at rape stats, regardless of someone's gender, right? Whoever has raped that person, that's just what's reported. We create a culture where there's so much taboo around this stuff that nobody wants to speak about it. And they feel like if we don't speak about it and we just do what one-year-olds do, right? Which is cover their eyes and think, well, if I can't see you, you can't see me. That if I'm not talking about it, it doesn't exist. And that's just not true. Now, there's other traumas as well, right? I mean, the psychological stuff, some of the things I had to, you know, the tertiary stuff that would come up along the way. I mean, that stuff is really intense too, whether it be financial abuse, psychological abuse, verbal, emotional, physical or sexual, it all can create a trauma. And then on top of that, people can feel guilty for talking about it because they feel like they're not being a good son or daughter. By throwing, you know, it's not always a parent. Let's just say in this case, it's a parent. All kids love their abusers. They just want the abuse to stop.
Yep.
And so they will deny it too, right? They just can't allow themselves to see that they can't hold their parent in compartments and see that, you know, you get it.
Yeah, I just had a client this morning. That's what I was doing. We were going through, and in her mind, her parents were good people, but they were just having all kinds of their own personal issues that created a lot of fear, like a lot of yelling and, you know, screaming and belittling and stuff like that. But at the same time, they weren't bad people, but they were dealing with their own pain. And then that translates over to her. So now she's dealing with it.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of feeling unsafe as a child.
Which absolutely
on a health issue, so she has a whole bunch of health issues found on top of it, because what I see, we have this unresolved trauma, we create inflammation in the body. Inflammation is a temporary resource to protect the body and to help heal it, but mm-hmm. if it's chronic, then it starts affecting the whole system, and mm-hmm. then sick, because it compromises the immune system and the neurotransmitters.
Mm-hmm. So
sicker, and then they feel bad, and we just mm-hmm. medicate. That's the solution. Yeah. Are you seeing the same things?
Absolutely. And I think too, we the body has an interesting way of bringing our attention back to it when we disassociate. And we know that when we have trauma, we disassociate to a certain degree. So depending on how great the hold is on our being will determine how disembodied we are for a good chunk of the day. So I do notice that we tend to stub our toe, or we tend to bang our head on the cupboard because we left it open because we weren't really in our body, or we tend to, you know, hit our funny bone. There's all kinds of little things we can do to bring our energy back into the body. But then when it's this bigger stuff, we know that we're holding trauma in the body. So we kind of have to go through the portal of the body on some level, right? We can go through the mind and stuff too, but the body, we have to create conditions that allow us to feel safe in the body. Because if we don't feel safe in it, we just keep bouncing out. We just keep, you know, living from our head up, basically.
Yeah. And it just keeps on going on. And then the health issues compound. My daughter, which we didn't realize when she was six, had some trauma that we were unaware of. She developed Crohn's, and then she had an autoimmune disorder called idiopathic pulmonary hemosiderosis, which was just where the lungs would release the blood, the iron in the blood. So they'd start filling up with blood. And on both those conditions, they told us there's no cure for it, and we don't know what causes it. And in both those cases, from after I started doing all the research into this, is what I discovered, it was trauma. And the trauma creating that. And once we resolve the trauma, we resolve those issues. But as long as trauma is looping, is going to continue to activate. And I always talk about, I don't know what you say, Jennifer, but whenever I talk about activations instead of triggers, I never liked the word trigger. Mm-hmm. I always thought trigger sounded negative and violent. And I don't believe minds are trying to be negative and violent. Mm-hmm. They're trying to protect us. And so why are they going into some activation? Mm-hmm. It's calling for some sort of an action. They want stop, pain stop, or something to do about whatever is looping through this trauma memory.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Yeah, so, it's pretty astounding. And it's so great that you do that work with people, because, you know, if you went to a medical doctor, it's not to knock medical doctors, it's just to say that they look at symptoms, they don't look at the holistic nature of what's going on. And some will geek out enough on the information to go and research, you know, like autoimmune stuff, and see the connection between trauma, or see the connection between mindset or something. But most just go, oh, that's your symptom, here's a pill. Yep. And then that person never gets better. They only need more medication, or they develop, you know, other symptoms, right, because of the medication.
And that's, so when people come into me and they'll say, well, I have anxiety, or I have depression, I just say to them, well, that's a symptom of something. Mm-hmm. You're not anxious, an anxious person or a depressed person. That's a symptom. Why is your mind going into depression? And what I'll say is, tell me what you're angry about. And they'll come back and say, well, I'm not angry, I'm depressed. And I go, well, depression's anger. Mm-hmm. Your mind is trying to get something done. It's trying to make something stop, some pain. Chances are, if it's a trauma pain, it can't fix it. Mm-hmm. But it can't complain for the action. So if your mind uses anger to try to get some sort of an action, and you don't answer the call, because you can't answer the call, right? It's impossible to change it. Your mind goes into a depressed state to protect you from the pain of the action. Depression is the absence of emotions. So it stops using anger, right? And uses no emotion, goes flat. Mm-hmm. So if you can get to the root of what the depression is all about, the root cause of it, and you resolve it, which we can do with memory, because I say memory is what's looping. Once we reset the memory, we reset, right, the way the mind responds, stops calling.
Absolutely. Yeah. Even it gets me thinking about food too, and people that have issues with emotional eating, or binging and purging, or binging and then restricting, or whatever the situation is. And more often, you know, this is a side note, but I often tell my business clients, like, Weight Watchers is not in the business of helping people lose weight. On the outside, it's that. But they know that once you start releasing the weight, you're going to start bringing to the surface the stuff that you're working on. And that's why they want to give you some results, for sure. And yes, I realize they make a lot of money, but they wouldn't have been making a lot of money saying, hey, let us help you release the trauma that you have, you know, buried in your body. They have to instead go at it a different angle, and then start, you know, resourcing people when the issues in their tissues come up, so to speak, right? But so often we're eating to satisfy a need, or we Well, especially if you think of all the ways we orally fixate and that developmental stage, right, of the trauma that would have been happening when we were in that like 0 to 1 year of age kind of situation, things like that. So I don't like to hang out in trauma in the sense that I don't talk about it openly in marketing. It's something that happens to happen once people come in the door, right? And then they realize, oh, there's some really deep stuff that has to be worked on. Most people don't actively seek out to work with their trauma because they've expended a lot of energy to try and hide it so they don't have to deal with it because they don't want to have to relive it.
So what's the typical client that you're seeing? Like I know you're talking about business clients. So tell me.
It's so fascinating to me. And I know this too. Like I was probably in my mid-30s before I even realized that my mom was a narcissist. Which sounds strange for me to say that, right?
Well, not if
because, that's what I knew. And nobody really talked about it. There's a lot of conditioning around being a good child, particularly a good daughter. And then you're not allowed, you know, it goes against societal expectations to speak ill of your mom. And yet my mom used to drive me batty because she was always pulling on my energy. And so I started to see patterns of this showing up in my business where my mom was always pulling on my energy, always, 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 right? So when I had space and people were reaching out to book appointments, I was fine. When I had too many clients, which is a good problem to have, right? For most people coming at me, all saying, I want you, I want you, I want you, and I need an appointment yesterday, then I would get this response, which I didn't like in my body, but I didn't know that I had attracted my mom in my business. Which is that is the gift of having a narcissistic parent. And I see this with a lot of my clients. The gift of having a narcissistic parent is that you really learn how to hold space. Like if you want to get in a service-based business, go and get yourself a narcissistic parent. I'm being playful, obviously, right? Because you master the art of making it all about everyone else but you. You don't even, you can't even be visible in that relationship, right?
Are you tired of dealing with stress, anxiety, panic attacks, depression, even feeling broken? Have traumatic events and experiences in your life created post-traumatic stress for you? Perhaps you're an athlete, an executive, trying to reach that next level of performance. Well, there's nothing wrong with you, and there's nothing wrong with your mind. Your mind is dealing with some glitches and error messages as a result of these traumatic events or disturbing events earlier in your life. It's interfering with your ability to stay present because the memory keeps on looping, activating your nervous system. I've helped thousands of people deal with anxiety, panic attacks, depression, feeling that sense of brokenness. We can clear that in as little as 4 hours. Check out our website, inspiredperformanceinstitute.com, and check out some of the stories and testimonials. Some of these may relate to what you've experienced in your life, and we look forward to helping you reach your next level of performance. And there it is.
So when we launch a service-based business, we're really good at tuning into other people's needs, listening to them, listening for the nuances, really pouring into people, really loving them up with our offers and stuff like that. And that can get us to a certain level in business, but then at some point burnout is inevitable on that track. And so then of course the same thing, you know, you're maybe getting up to mid six figures, possibly seven figures showing up that way. But after that, it's not the trauma, the unconscious trauma driven behaviors that are going to get us to that eight figure year, for example. It has to be done from a place of safety, right? And making sure that our foundation that we're growing from is really safe. And I do feel like the journey from six to seven figures is releasing that trauma.
Interesting. Yeah, very good.
We have an addictive parent, right? And like I investigated cases where the four-year-old was in charge. Dad was drunk all the time. They didn't want to go to the neighbors because they knew that they would be taken away if they went to the neighbors. There was literally no food in the house. They had rotting iceberg lettuce and some peanut butter. So the girl would make her and her sibling peanut butter and iceberg lettuce sandwiches And they were in the house for days. Unbeknownst to them, their dad had actually passed away in the house. That's why we got called, because I don't want to get graphic, but like people were noticing something smelly coming from the house. And, but they didn't, they just thought their dad was passed out as usual. But then we fast forward to adulthood. And when you have over responsibility as your conditioning, you're parentified, you have all these things going on, and then you grow up and have a business, again, you can really make it about other people. You really know how to lead. So that's the gift. But then what happens is, because we have such a hyper sense of over responsibility, we actually, people that have parents like that typically feel like client attraction is always evading them, because they want more clients. They know the business needs more clients, but they also are relieved when nobody signs up, because they're already feeling so immensely responsible for like the five clients that they have, that they can't imagine letting anyone else into their world, in part because they don't want to let them down, but also because they're just tired of being an adult from like age four, for example.
So when you have a client, a young child like that, what's the follow-up? What do you do? What were your resources to help them?
At that time, when I went out on the, we had to arrange for them to stay with other family, right? And then we have to put them into counseling. But let's be honest, there's a real lack of proper counseling for kids at that age. Sure. Most people don't know how to, because you're dealing with some early stage developmental issues, right? And there's some really great, like that, for example, we referred that case to an attachment specialist, because we knew, the rule is that at the time that you have a trauma, it takes you double the time to heal it. So if you have a trauma at age four, if you get regular counseling from four onwards, then by 8 years old, you should be back on track developmentally. But there's such a lack of resources, and it's nobody's fault. It's just that most people don't look to specialize in that stuff. And that if anyone's listening and they want to get into attachment style psychology and like really deal with attachment issues, please do that, because there's such a shortage of people that do that work.
It's just probably very difficult work too, right? So attract people to it, seeing children go through things like that, right? Takes a toll on the system.
Yeah. So even if you think, just speaking of trauma, right, and the vicarious trauma of having to hear people's stories, right, when these kids are telling you things, even if you think of the admin staff that used to have to type, I was an expert witness all the time in court. I would have to write out my own affidavits, but then they'd have to be processed by various court processors. Even our own internal admin would have to read notes and file notes and stuff like that. And they were often off on short-term disability, and people would make fun of them because there's the secondary culture that's created in a job like that is this kind of hero. I don't want to say hero worship. That's not really the right word, but you do feel the peer pressure to push through, right? Like, let's say a police officer that happens to attend a very horrific car accident, and I know many who have. They need counseling, but their colleagues and just the culture in general, often in police forces, is, you should man up or woman up or be able to push through that, or you're just going to have to get used to it. That's just part of the job. This is what you signed up for, or various things like that. People also get excluded, on, let's say for me, I worked Monday to Friday. So on Friday night, I got invited to these, after work, like dinners or whatever we were going to do. I actually would have preferred not to, but if you're not taking one for the team, then you often get excluded and people mock you or they set you up. There's just various things that happen. And so it to deal with trauma in any direction, regardless of your role in it or being on the receiving end of it, we tend to dance around it. We know it's something that we need to deal with, but there's so much, there's so many labels that are placed on it and so many assumptions that people have that it can almost feel like there's more to lose by leaning into it than more to gain.
Yeah. And then it becomes part of their identity as well. Like people will come in, say, well, this is who I am. I've always been, I sat at a conference one time with a lady and this motivational speaker was up there, and you know, typical motivational speaker where he would be really excited and then tell a sad story and then go into a really positive. So we had this roller coaster going, and she was just like constantly crying throughout this thing. And I said to her, I can see you're very emotional. She goes, yeah, that's just who I am. I'm a very emotional person. And I said, oh, okay. And I said, how would you like to stop that? And she goes, well, I've always been emotional. I've been emotional all my life. And I said, yeah, I know, but that's coming from a reason. There's a reason why, right? Emotions are calls for actions. So I said, I'm had quite a bit of trauma in your life. She goes, oh, yeah, you have no idea how much trauma I've had. I said, well, I have a pretty good idea just sitting with you in this conference without even knowing anything about you. There's no reason why you would be that emotional unless something kept activating your nervous system. And that's generally trauma. Mm-hmm. And I said, we can heal that. You don't need to live with that. Mm-hmm. The purpose of an emotion is good if there's an action that's possible. But if your mind is looping through old trauma, thinking that it needs to fix it or needs to do something, then that doesn't make any sense. That's a glitch. Error message. We should be living in the present, right? Dealing with what's happening now. I said, trauma keeps pulling us back into old data, and our mind sees old memory in real time. That's what keeps activating your nervous system. And I said, but we don't have to live like that. And so that's what we did. Took her through the program, and it cleared up the trauma loop. And once you clear up the trauma loop, then she starts to feel better. And then that's why, Jennifer, that's why when you were talking about Weight Watchers, right, using Weight Watchers, right, as opposed to trauma, right, we call our program the Inspired Performance Program. Based on performance. What's interfering with you performing at your highest level? And it's generally trauma is pulling energy. And so if you go to that energy drain, it actually affects the mitochondria, the ATP production, right, in the cells. So I love working with athletes because I can see the results with an athlete very quickly because they're constantly measuring performance. So I've worked with people and 2 days later are winning world championships, breaking world records, not because I made them faster or better. We just release the energy. So we do a lot of stuff with energy. So how does that relate to the work that you're doing as well? It's sort of resonating with you as well.
Absolutely. It makes me think of some of my earlier clients. I was dating someone at the time that was a sports medicine doctor for the Seattle Sonics. So he ended up referring, and I was doing intuitive readings back then in case, you know, so you can imagine, by the way, me working in forensics being highly intuitive and, you know, trying to navigate that world. Right. But this guy had heard about me. And so he started referring me to his clients, but he also, you know, wanted to date me as well. So we did have been dating for a few years, but a lot of these guys grew up in the inner city, and they told me, I remember very specifically them saying they would go to do a 3-point shot. Everyone's watching them. And all they hear is their stepdad in their ear saying, you're a piece of, you know what, and you're never going to amount to anything. And poof, the shot goes. And then the crowd boos. So then that anchors in the trauma or anchors in the response, right? And then maybe their coach benches them. Maybe their coworkers are rousing them because they, you know, missed a shot that should, you know, oh, I could have got that shot or various things like that. They were often had peer, like some of them had, you know, 4 or 5 venereal diseases, like severe venereal diseases, because they were constantly trying to fill an unmet need, either sexually or even just by being part of the pack and feeling like they were finally a part of something. But they would tell me, you know, look, I grew up with cocaine all over the kitchen table, a new stepdad every year, guns on the table, drive-by shootings. And then all of a sudden you're giving me a $5 million paycheck. Right? Like there's a massive calibration that needs to happen, because we know this, right? We know that our mind, not that it's all about money, but we just know that the money can be a byproduct of when we shift our mindset. All of a sudden, when we recognize more of our value, miraculously more money kind of, you know, shows up. But that's why a lot of them were coming to me. And so it, I learned a lot from them. Actually, I'm very grateful to have learned from them, because I wouldn't have really had a behind the scenes peek into some of the things that athletes go through and why they have some of the performance issues that they do.
Yeah. Yeah. And it affects like so many. And then they get into drugs and alcohol because they're trying to cope and manage. And then it all starts to spiral out of control on them.
Mm-hmm.
It's certainly understandable, just like you experienced, like you were just saying, their experiences earlier in their life.
Yeah.
They just go away unless you work on them, but they never get anybody to help them with that. That's one mm-hmm. of the things, you know, that we do as well. So if you don't resolve that childhood trauma, you're never going to be able to reach your highest level of performance, even if they're already performing at a high level. That's totally. What I talk about. You have another gear, right? Mm-hmm. And so even for athletes, you know, I'll say, if you get to that next gear, you'll perform at a higher level. Mm-hmm. It's as simple as that. But you can still be, you know, very talented. Same thing with executives. You know, they're performing, they're a CEO of their corporation doing very well, right? But they can't go and tell HR that they have panic attacks.
Mm-hmm.
They don't know where the panic attacks are coming from, but they're having them. Mm-hmm. And so they're trying to manage and live with them and cope with them. Because if they go to HR, HR tells the board, right? Then the board's looking for a new CEO.
Mm-hmm.
So they're not encouraged to go get help. Same mm-hmm. thing. I mean, how many professional athletes do you hear? They can't go and say they have a problem because mm-hmm. the team can terminate their, because there's so many ways that a team can terminate their contract for issues just like that.
Mm-hmm.
Morals clauses, all kinds of stuff.
Yeah. Even if you think of something we can all relate to, which is taxes. Taxes are part of a more masculine structure. It's an institutional energy, which means it's more masculine, but it's also an authority. So if we have issues with men, or we have issues with anyone that had authority over us, usually our parents or whoever was raising us, right? Whoever our guardians were, it's no wonder that people avoid paying taxes like crazy, because they're not really avoiding the money. They're avoiding the trauma that's underneath as it relates to their relationship with either masculine energy or authority, right? So I've seen many people finally shift their money story when they deal with that stuff, because they would get beside themselves when it was tax time, like a very heightened response that wouldn't be like a sort of standard response that we would have. That's just one example, but as you know, it shows up everywhere. And so to answer your question, you know, when I work with people, well, the forensic brain in me looks for patterns. So the courses that I create are all based on, here's likely what's going to show up if you had a narcissistic parent. Here's likely what's going to show up if you had an addictive parent. Here's different layers of what you can look at and how to unpack that if you've got issues with money, or you know, you're stagnating, or you know you could be doing more in business and you're not. When I work with people one-on-one, I guess the best way to describe it is, because I am intuitive, I can see right inside. Like, I can see to the core. I can just laser in and go very quickly, there's the issue. Let's unpack that issue. We have to hang out in the emotion of it for a bit, because whether or not the emotion's not comfortable, whether we face it or not, like it's going to be temporary, because emotions are like weather, you know, they're very transient and move throughout the day. But it's almost like a lucid hypnosis session, right? I can see in, and then I speak into their consciousness, the new programs that they're wanting to hold. And then sure enough, they have changes very quickly, not unlike what you were describing with people that you're working with. So I tend to work with people that are like me, who are efficiency experts. They like to move quickly. They don't want it to take, you know, 75 sessions to get to the stuff. And they're happy to keep coming back, but they don't want to feel like 5 years in a row they're still talking about their mom, for example.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, that's why our program, we do 4 hours. I say I get traumatic stress in 4 hours. It's a glitch.
Mm-hmm.
It's a glitch. The mind is looping through the memory, continually activating the system, right?
Mm-hmm.
Our system is designed to protect us, right? So if there's a threat, it makes sense that it would activate and go into a fight or flight response.
Mm-hmm.
But looking at memory and activating a fight or flight response, that doesn't make any sense.
Mm-hmm. So
that continues to run below their conscious awareness, it's going to have an effect on their mental health and physical health. Mm-hmm. And all we have to do is reset the memory. Mm-hmm. And so I do that very quickly. And the reason I use 4 hours is because by the time we're 2 hours in, we haven't even talked about trauma yet. I'm mm-hmm. just talking about the science behind how our minds work and why it does what it does. And I start off every session the same way. There's nothing wrong with you and there's nothing wrong with your mind. The mm-hmm. reason you're experiencing what you're experiencing is because of some things that have happened in your life that have been recorded in high definition and memory and continues to set the nervous system into a response. Mm-hmm. Right? So what we're going to do, I'll usually say it this way. I'll say, like, if I was talking to you, Jennifer, I'd say, what did you have for dinner last night? And they'll describe what they had for dinner. And I said, that's how you stored the information about dinner. I said, but it was a fairly low resolution file because it wasn't very traumatic or disturbing. So all the details of that were not stored in a very high definition format. Mm-hmm. But if you're in a traumatic event, all your senses are heightened, sight, smell, hearing. So how's it going to record it? Very bright, very intense, high def, in a very high beta brainwave state. And so there's so much detail in that memory that the mind can't distinguish between that and something that's real. So mm-hmm. it's going to set off a response, which it's supposed to do if there's a threat. Mm-hmm. But there's no threat. It's just information about the threat. Mm-hmm. During that session, we'll get the mind to reset that high definition format into the same format as to what you ate for dinner last night. Mm-hmm. For the action, because it doesn't see it as a threat. Mm-hmm. The most dramatic one, I tell the story a lot because it was very dramatic, is a U.S. Army sniper who had to kill a 12-year-old boy. And when he first sat down for 8 years, he'd been dealing with this trauma. And he said, I can't talk about this anymore. He goes, they keep asking me to talk about it. And I said, well, I don't need you to talk about it. I said, let's just get it fixed. By the time I was finished, he could give me a complete description of what happened that day. And he said to me, he goes, how did you do this? How am I able to talk about it now without shaking and crying? And I said, because for 8 years, your mind's been trying to get you not to pull the trigger. It's been calling for action that isn't possible. It thinks you're shooting a 12-year-old boy now as you're seeing it in memory. But that's but your mind doesn't know that. And so we're just going to reset it. And that's life-changing for people when they can do that. And then brings them back to be able to stay present.
Right. Yeah. And what a gift that is, right? We know how much devastation can happen when people come back from serving in those capacities. Even, well, any, I'll say first responders and anyone in the military and various roles like that, where they're having to deal with that kind of intense thing, whether they're actively in it or witnessing it or hearing about it. And we know the effects of PTSD in people, right? And just all the ripple effects of it tearing apart families and creating high incidence of suicide and various things like that. So that's amazing that you're doing that work with people.
So we actually got a patent on it. So on the way we're doing it, we're combining it with some technology. So we're just going to be announcing this device that you'll wear on your ear that's monitoring oxygen. And it will determine when the system starts going into a response below your conscious awareness. When I wrote the patent, I said a panic attack starts an hour before you're even aware. So your system is feeling uneasy and it's starting on a very low level to activate, but you're not aware of it because you're not feeling your heart rate change. You're not feeling your breath change, but your system is starting to prepare. So that's happening up to an hour before. So the mind is looking for the danger, the brain is looking for the danger, then can't find it because it's not happening. It's just looping through some trauma memory. So if it can't find it, but it keeps getting messages from the body that we're running low on oxygen, the pH of the blood is changing, all these start to be confirmations that there must be a danger. Otherwise, why would our oxygen levels be changing? Why would our blood levels be changing? And so then it goes into a panic mode. And people who experience a panic attack say it comes on instantly, but it's not true. It's starting up to an hour before. So what we're going to do is be able to alert them that their system is starting to do it. And then we've given them a protocol on how to shut it down. And then they can bring them back into regulation right before it ever happened.
Okay, I'm going to figure out how many awards I can nominate you for that. I'm going to blitz. I'm going to blitz them with nominations.
That would be awesome. Well, we got the patent on that for panic attacks, but they added it for anxiety and post-traumatic stress when they understood what we were doing. And because it's the same kind of thing, post-traumatic stress is coming from the mind, right? Actually searching through old memory because something looks like, sounds like, smells like it. So It basically does a Google search. So my wife grew up in a traumatic household. So when I first met her, if I said something as simple as, no, I don't like that, she would start to tear up and cry and say, she'd go, why are you upset with me? And I'd go, honey, I'm not upset at all. And she'd go, yes, you are. The way you said it, you're getting upset. And she wasn't wrong and I wasn't wrong. I didn't say it like that. But if I was a little tired at the end of the day and this little change in my voice happened, right? So I got a little tension in my voice. Maybe I'm just tired. She could hear that like I was yelling at her.
Mm-hmm.
So what that would do was activate her Google search about men who started to get angry. Mm-hmm. And a flood of data about her father would come in. And then all this data is starting to run below her conscious awareness. She thinks it's what I said. I'm thinking it's what I said. What I did is activate the memory, right? Without realizing it. And that would be a flood of information that would overwhelm her nervous system. And then she'd cry. So I couldn't fix that until we get in and get the memory reset. Once we got the memory reset, we stopped the activation.
Mm-hmm.
And that was sort of the way I started to look at it from the patent standpoint and said, if we fix that, we fix the problem. We don't have to have people live, manage, and cope with it. Let's get it addressed and fixed at the root cause, which what I have seen is memory is causing it.
Yeah.
So
that's amazing. That's when is that going to be released?
Any day. We just actually doing the tests on the device right now. I use it already, the program, for panic attacks. We're getting people to stop the panic attacks. But now what'll happen is when the oxygen level changes, we can set whatever parameters we want. So we can make it as sensitive or whatever you want. So what will happen is the device on your ear will vibrate first. That's the first sign that it's changed. And then on your cell phone, right, the protocol that we just told you to use shows up on your cell phone. So it reminds you to start now doing what we've taught you how to do, to start shutting, get your nervous system to come back into regulation. And then a pretense phone call will come in. So it's not a real phone call, but if you're sitting in a meeting, right, and you're susceptible to these kinds of attacks, you would just hold up your phone and say, I'm sorry, I've got a call I've got to take, right? And allows you to step out of the meeting. And then there's an audio of me through, right? And then an alert will show up to somebody, whoever you want alerted. They will get an alert with a Google map and a pin of your location of where you are. So they can follow up with you and let you know that they're there for you if you need them.
Wow, that's amazing.
So we're going to definitely make that announcement probably pretty shortly after just finishing the final testing on it.
Cool. Well, please keep me in the loop. Just I want to check that out for sure.
Absolutely. So I know we're running. We both got things we got to run to. So how do people get a hold of you and the great work that you're doing? You're obviously doing some amazing stuff as well. So how do they reach you? Just give us some background here.
People can find Jennifer Longmore on most of the socials, except for TikTok. I have not mustered up the motivation to dance and have little, you know, sayings under my face. No judgment, just, you know. But I'm on most of the socials. And then if you go to souljourneys.ca, actually, if you go to souljourneys.ca/money, then that's where I talk about the root causes of some of the five most common money blocks, really, and then how to heal them really quickly and how to start moving that energy. So you might as well, if you're going to check out my site, get a free download while you're there. And that's me.
I appreciate it. I was looking forward to talking to you. I know you've
got a lot of
stuff that you're doing and you know, just helping more and more people, you know, find, get rid of those blocks that are interfering with their highest level of performance. So Jennifer, thank you so much for being on an episode of You Must Be Out of Your Mind. And thank you everybody for listening to another
episode. Thank you.
Right, there it is.